icons are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 79, A Good Day to Die. Friday, June 12th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yinhu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's podcast includes the following segments: The Back Porch, Sheep to Shawl, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, and Off the Shelf. I'd like to extend a special welcome to Miss Pam Murphy, who is Pam from New Hampshire and is excited to end her school year shortly and spend her summer focused on gardening and spinning. Thank you also to Bliss Cat for the wonderful fiber donation for my student spinners. They will soon be receiving that, and I'm certain they will put it to good use. I'd like to announce the winners of the Me Made May Instagram contest. There were quite a few folks who posted regularly to Instagram with photographs of garments or accessories that they had made themselves, all using hashtag YAYH, Me Made May 15. In order to draw the winners, I wrote down the names of every Instagram user who had posted a photograph at some time during the month of May, and then I just drew three winners, beginning with the third place prize for a pattern on Ravelry. The winner for a Ravelry pattern, $7 or less, is Aspen and Spruce. The winner of some cosmic wonder worms, which is a spinning fiber that I have made into roll eggs on my blending board, is Holity 7. And the winner of a project bag made by me is Judy in the Dyes. Thank you to everyone who played along and posted photographs of their handmade items during the month of May. I think it's a great way to honor all of the crafting we do, to actually wear some of it and be very public about our skills and abilities. If you are one of the three lucky winners, you can contact me, Sarah Pomegranate, on Ravelry, and let me know whatever information would be pertinent to your win. In particular, Judy in the Dyes, we have some options to discuss. The Back Porch. I have made it a kind of a personal policy in podcasting not to apologize or explain during the podcast. And I have to admit, sometimes that is very, very difficult. So I won't apologize or explain, but I will admit that it's been longer than I've liked since last recording. And I kept hoping that I would have a little more progress to talk about, especially as far as this back porch segment is concerned. I'm dismayed to report that I have not progressed very much on many of my projects, even though I've been quite busy with them and quite happily working. I have managed to finish up spinning and plying. The Corriedale fiber dyed by Haven Fiber. I purchased this at the yarn store in Rutland, Vermont, about this time last year, I believe, when I was up there on a tour of Bovine Social Club. I have never spun Corriedale before, so this was a new experience. And I was also using, for the first time, my new bobbins on hand-dyed yarn. Over the winter, I was eager to start using the bobbins I received from Samuel for Christmas, and I did work on a 3-ply yarn with some naturally colored fiber. But I was curious to see what experiments I could do and what kind of an interesting barber pulled effect I could get by creating a 3-ply from dyed fiber. And this fiber was beautifully dyed, a lot of jewel tones, everything from deep greens and reds to some really lovely bright pops of turquoise and bright yellow. So I divided the fiber in such a way that each of my 3 bobbins would have a different arrangement or organization of color throughout, and then I plied those together. A 3-ply is just such a plump, lovely, round yarn, and the barber pulling is an added special effect. I ended up with 215 yards of a 3-ply, and then another 35 to 40 yards of a 2-ply. Try as I might to divide my fiber evenly, it usually turns out that I have a little bit left over on 2 of the bobbins while the other one is all used up. I think this yarn would make a really fun hat, or maybe a thick, short cowl that's close to the neck. The Corriedale is plush and rather soft, so it is great for next to the skin kinds of accessories, and the colors are really, really fun. So I'm glad to have that project complete, and also to have my bobbins and my wheel all freed up, because I anticipate completing some spindling projects very shortly and during Tour de Fleece. And then I will likely use my Louette wheel to do the plying. I foolishly thought that I might complete my Hane, a short-sleeved top designed by Kirsten Johnstone, by the end of May. And I had finished the knitting on the body of the sweater by the end of May, but before seaming it, I needed to soak and block it, and then also steam iron the edges to get it to stop curling. And just about the time that I had soaked the sweater, we received quite a substantial amount of rainfall in the Northeast. It just rained and rained for days, which was wonderful because we were really in need of some rain. And then it was humid for several more days, and this linen top just took forever to dry. I was very concerned about the fabric stretching if I tried to work with it when it was damp, so I was reluctant to remove it from my blocking boards until it was completely bone dry. And that took over a week just because of the damp conditions in the air, and also Yinhu is completely shaded in the summer months, and we reside near a creek, which adds extra moisture into the air. So finally, the linen was dry, and I could work with it. It took a long time, but I was very satisfied with my seaming up the side of the sweater, and then I also seamed the left sleeve into the space for the armhole. After that, I used an I-cord edging to edge the neckline as well as the right armhole. And I am currently in the process of knitting the ruffled sleeve that will be designated for the right sleeve of the top. So far, I am extremely pleased with this garment, the design, the pattern writing, and the linen yarn. I think it's going to be just a gorgeous and really special and unusual summer top. The color of the linen, it's 100% linen from Shibui, is clay. It's a beautiful terracotta color. And I think because it's quite close to my skin tone that I'll be able to wear it with just a nude colored undergarment, and it will be, you know, really comfortable and breathable for the summer months. I wear a lot of linen garments in summer, so it will be easy to fit this into the rest of my wardrobe. The pattern is so well written that I could see it being a template for maybe a wool top in fingering weight yarn as well. The shaping is just gorgeous. And the folded hem of this garment, even though it is extremely time-consuming, is really nice. It lends a lot of structure and body to the garment, and the bottom and the sleeve do not roll up because of this beautiful folded hem detail. So I highly recommend this pattern, Hane, by Kirsten Johnstone. I think that it's a pattern for an intermediate or advanced knitter. It's certainly not the thing for a beginning knitter. And if you want to complete a garment quickly, this is certainly not the one for you. There's a lot of yardage. I will have used over 950 yards by the time I complete this ruffled sleeve. So that's a great contribution to Stash Dash, but it has been a pretty substantial time commitment for the sweater. I am continuing throughout the summer to work on rust dyeing pieces of muslin fabric, and I may extend that into other kinds of fabric as well, with a couple of different methods. One method is to apply rusted objects to fabric that has been pre-treated with water and vinegar. A second method of dyeing with rust is to use a Japanese-style folding technique and submerge the folded pieces of muslin into a dye bath of rust and very strong black tea. This past week, I was able to complete the dye process for several pieces of fabric, immerse them into a salt and water solution to stop the oxidation and rusting action, and then let the fabric soak in a bath with a little bit of warm water and some fabric softener. One thing I noticed with rust-dyed fabric is that it becomes very stiff. It's difficult to sew as well, so I'm not sure about the situation with needles on my sewing machine. But it definitely improves by using a little bit of fabric softener in the water to wash these pieces after they've been dyed. I've included a photograph of several different types of dyeing, which is drying, on my porch, and you'll find that on the episode thread for this podcast on yarns@yinhu.com. And I also started thinking about what to make with this rust dyed fabric. My initial thinking was that I could make some fabric cowls. I've seen a few tutorials about this process, and I thought that would be really cool. But the stiffness of the fabric makes that application not so appealing as I initially thought. So then I started thinking about useful things that I could make with this fabric, such as project bags and things like that. And using a tutorial for bento bags that I found on Pinterest, I made one of the strips of rust-dyed fabric into a beautiful, useful, and quite large bento bag. I'll have to link to that tutorial. But essentially, you need a strip of fabric that is 3 times as long as it is wide. And with some very clever folding and seaming techniques, you can make yourself a very simple bag and box the corners. And it's the kind of a bag that you tie shut. Right now, I'm using the bento bag that I made to hold all of the hand-spun and plant-dyed yarn and fiber that I have completed in my work at the Fibercraft Studio. Speaking of sheep to shawl, the first weekend in June was session number 6, and we will not have July or August sessions formally at the Fibercraft Studio for the Sheep to Shawl class, but a number of us plan to visit Fibercraft Studio once or twice during the summer and maybe even get together a little bit. Our June session of the Sheep to Shawl class was devoted to further exploration with plant dyes. There is an extensive biodynamic garden at the Threefold Center in Chestnut Ridge, New York, and adjacent to that is a dyeing garden. So we were first given an orientation to many of the plants in the garden by Chris, one of our instructors for the Sheep to Shawl class. And then we worked together to do a little bit of gathering. When we got back to Fibercraft Studio, we made 2 huge dye pots. One with weld, more specifically weld flowers, which yield a brilliant yellow color. And another with freshly harvested madder root. We had worked with some madder during the May session where we made sun dyeing jars, but that madder had been from a previous season and had been dried. This madder was freshly dug up from the garden, so we dug maybe a square foot section of the madder plant and harvested the roots. When we got back to the studio, we rinsed and then we chopped the roots into as small pieces as we could. The more surface area, the greater the potential for extraction of the dye matter. And then we put that chopped up matter as well as the weld in 2 different pots and set them to a simmer. All of the plant material was in kind of a cheesecloth bag at the end of this simmering time. And then we squeezed and pressed and extracted as much of the dye material as we could. And we left the plant matter in the dye pots as kind of a tea bag to steep. Before our little trip to the dye garden, we had weighed out whatever hand-spun yarn or cleaned and washed fiber we wanted to apply with a mordant. And so I think we had nearly 2 pounds of yarn and fiber all together, and we made a solution of alum and cream of tartar. The cream of tartar, I learned, is simply a softening agent. It's the alum that really does the work of treating the fiber and yarn with a mordant. And we let that simmer and then squeezed out all of the liquid from that mordant treatment before we put our yarn and fiber into one or both of the dye pots. All of these processes took quite a long time, so it was nearing the end of the day before we were able to put our yarn and fiber into the dye pots. I would have liked to leave mine quite a bit longer, although the instructor said that really to get a more vibrant color, the method is to remove the material, squeeze out all of the liquid, let the yarn or fiber dry completely, and then reintroduce the yarn or fiber to the dye bath. Simply leaving something to sit longer and longer and longer does not necessarily yield a deeper color. And I had never thought about that or been told that before, so that was interesting to think about in terms of my summer experimentation, that I might give some yarn several different soaks in the same dye bath to see if I could get a deeper or a richer color. I removed my yarn and fiber from the dye bath and just put it into some Ziploc baggies for the ride home, and then I let it dry once I returned home. And then once it was fully dry, I gave it a good rinse in a vinegar and water solution to help set the color and keep it from washing out. I'm very pleased with the colors that I got on this yarn and fiber. Into the weld pot, I put some Polypay fiber and some Jacob yarn, and the fleece that I was using for that particular Jacob yarn was pretty bright white. I think even Stephen West would be pretty impressed with the intensity of yellow. It's not exactly Edison Bowl, but it is a bright yellow that the weld gave to the yarn and fiber. And then into the pot with the madder, I put some more Jacob yarn. This time it was from a fleece that had a little more in the way of guard hairs or like a dual coat. There was some soft downy fiber, but there was also some coarser bits of fiber. And I also put a small skein of the Hog Island yarn into the madder pot. And the Hog Island was kind of a heathery gray color to start with, pretty pale, but still. And that came out really well. The differences in color and the heathered effect looks really, really nice. So I've included some photos in my show notes, and I'm looking forward very much to continuing with dye experiments this summer. I brought home some indigo plants, some little seedlings, and I'm attempting to help them take root in the one very small but sunny spot in my garden. It will probably take a while for these plants to be strong enough that I can use some of the plant material for dyeing. But I also took home some of the green parts and a little bit of the root of the madder plant, And they are currently in a windowsill. I'm attempting to root those and maybe put some madder plants also into that sunny part of my garden. Madder takes 3 years or more before it's strong enough and has a developed enough root system to be harvested. But still, I can't imagine the pleasure that it would be to harvest my own madder root and use it to dye some yarn and fiber. Ever expanding skill set. Samuel and I have been given an opportunity to expand our culinary skill set in a way that I had never imagined. We've been invited by our local food and music establishment to be the guest chefs for a wine tasting and food pairing. This will take place in July, and as far as I understand, we have pretty much carte blanche with the menu. It's a four-course menu of small plates, so we don't have to worry about a great big entree, but I think it will be a challenge to vary the tastes quite a bit for this tasting menu. And one of the reps who's in charge of the bar program, or I guess helps the bar manager with the bar program at this restaurant, will be working to pair wines with the dishes that we serve. So it's just a really big undertaking. I tend to get really type A and nervous about these kinds of things, but it's also really exciting. We've decided on a Nashville theme, and as much as possible, we'd like to use local and seasonal ingredients, which is a challenge because we need to work quite a bit in advance of this July date. I feel confident that quite a few things will be available locally in July, but the point is they're not available now, and so it's difficult to test recipes and experiment with things on this kind of a timeline. Next week, I think we're going to do a test run of some of the dishes in our menu with the bar manager and her partner, and we'll get some feedback, and then from there, I can start to think about ingredient lists, and then most important of all will be a sequence for the kitchen. We have certainly the chef's help and oversight, and I think we get one additional kitchen staffer, but for the most part, making all of the food for this menu will be in our hands. And it is a rare event for me to have a large gathering of people at all, and I've never cooked for 40. My kitchen is so small and really not equipped to make the food for 40 people. So sequencing and thinking about, what will need to be done next, 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 and how to make elements of this menu in advance and then just be plating it before it goes out into the dining room. I think for me that will be the most important part in preparing for the day. In the meantime, during the month of June, for hashtag Power Pantry, I invite Yarns at Yinhu listeners to think about the fridge. Even after just making a post about this on Ravelry and opening up a thread, I've received a number of emotionally powerful posts about refrigerators. Quite a few folks report they are very unhappy with their current refrigerators, with their size, with their interior organization, their energy efficiency. And that was surprising to me. I know that I am unusual in my choice of a refrigerator, but I just assumed that, you know, most people had what they wanted. I just wanted something quite different from others. And it doesn't seem like that's necessarily the case. So I'd love to hear your refrigerator story. I think there are quite a few listeners out there who are interested in maybe researching for a future purchase. So if you can recommend anything, I think that would be helpful. And I'm also interested in just tips for storing things in the refrigerator, using up what's in the refrigerator, how the fridge figures into your pantry, your organization, your shopping, the dishes that you make, etc., etc. My refrigerator story is that when I moved to Yinhu, Samuel and I had bought the place, but I was not yet living in it. I was living in a different town in an apartment. So I was moving from an apartment kitchen to this very tiny two-story home, and it needed a lot of work. And we couldn't do it all in one summer. So we started with the second story and organizing office space, closets, which had been non-existent in this home. And, you know, we sort of just did the best we could with the kitchen and bathroom arrangement. After a summer or two, when my lettuce had frozen for what seemed like the millionth time, I declared that enough was enough with that refrigerator. And even though we were not ready to remodel the kitchen, given, you know, time or expense, I would be purchasing a new refrigerator because it wasn't efficient. The seal was starting to really break down and deteriorate because of the age of the refrigerator. And the cooling mechanism was just incredibly inconsistent and unpredictable. Samuel did all of the research and investigation, and we decided on a Blomberg refrigerator. This is a European-style design. So Blomberg refrigerators are quite tall, but they're not very deep. They're not cabinet deep. They don't have a lot of cubic footage in comparison to American refrigerators either. So the model we decided to order is a total of 10.6 cubic feet. And I think just over 6 of that is actual refrigerator space. The rest is freezer space. I am so happy with the purchase of this Blomberg refrigerator for several reasons. First, the freezer is located at the bottom of the unit. I don't open the freezer that often. It doesn't make sense to me when refrigerator models have a freezer at eye level and you need to be bending over or crouching on the floor to access the entire contents of your refrigerator. That has never made sense to me. So that was like number one on my list, that it was a bottom freezer version. The entire interior of both refrigerator and freezer are coated with like an antibacterial coating. The refrigerator stays impeccably clean, and it very rarely has any kind of an odor. There's pretty nice organization. There are two plastic bins, clear plastic bins, at the bottom of the refrigerator. They just sit at the bottom, so there's no weird track that they run on. They're just bins that tuck under the bottom shelf. When I'm looking for something in one of those bins, I tend to remove the entire bin and sort through the contents on the counter. And frequently, I dump everything out of the bin and then rinse it out, dry it, put things back in, and that helps keep everything clean and organized. There's also a wine rack in this refrigerator. There's not the terribly deep refrigerator door storage space that you find on a lot of American refrigerators. But I read an article somewhere that, storing very heavy items on the door of your refrigerator actually isn't a very good idea because it starts to warp or bend the door, and then the seal doesn't seal up completely, and then you start having problems with your refrigerator leaking cold air. So I like that there's no temptation to put a gallon of milk or anything like that on the door of this refrigerator because there simply isn't room. There's a little bit of space for condiments. And in general, the size of this refrigerator means that I need to go through ingredients and use them up. That things don't get lost in the back of the fridge, that everything is pretty much up front and easy to see. Things can't get lost back there or start to get moldy like a science project back there. I can't recommend them enough. If you're in the Northeast, in the New York area, Blomberg is available from AJ Madison in Manhattan, and they have free delivery for their appliances, and they were excellent to deal with. What's your fridge story? And what advice, tips, and suggestions do you have about refrigeration for fellow Yarns at Yinhu listeners? I would like to hear your input. Off the shelf. My summer break is just a few short weeks away, and at this time of the year, I start to think about summer reading. There are several different books on my list, and I really couldn't decide which one or ones I wanted to read over this summer. So I'm inviting Yarns at Yinhu listeners to help me make a decision and to have another read along. Our first read along in the winter months was, I think, a pretty big success. I was surprised by the number of people who expressed interest. A number of you did read along, and there were some others who said, "I hope you host another read along because it just didn't work out for me to participate this time, but I would love to do that in the future." Maybe summer is the time for you to do that. I have a poll on the Yarns at Yinhu group at on Ravelry that lists my four top choices for summer reading, and I invite you to vote. If you are not a Ravelry user, you can comment on this episode thread on yarnsatyinhu.com, and I will add your votes to my calculations. Whichever title receives the most votes will be the book for our read along. And then, if I have additional time, I might take on another book if I am inclined to do so. The four titles I'm considering, I tried to provide a lot of variety as much as I could. But also, maybe higher interest and a little less niche than the selection for the last read along. Maybe that will entice more listeners to join in. The first choice is a nonfiction work. It's called Color, A Natural History of the Palette by Victoria Finlay. I saw a copy of this at the Fibercraft Studio and I have been longing to read it ever since I browsed the book a little bit. Another title is H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. I've heard this reviewed to great acclaim on Fresh Air, I think it was, with Terry Gross. There was a book review of this book, and there are a lot of folks talking about it online. The third is The Poison Wood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver. This is the least recent publication of the four. It is a big fat novel. It's, a dense summer read, but I've read quite a few works by Barbara Kingsolver. I really enjoy her writing. Animal Vegetable Miracle is one of my favorite books of all time. And this book has been recommended to me by numerous colleagues and friends. I have a copy on my shelf and I have never cracked it open. So the summer could be a good time to do that. The fourth and final book is The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt. I'm very attracted to the themes of this work. It has to do with artwork and also New York City, which are both high interest for me. I've read Donna Tartt's two previous novels and I have enjoyed them. I like her style. She's a very literary writer. And I would certainly enjoy reading The Goldfinch as well. Current standings of the poll are that The Poisonwood Bible has received 4 votes, Color, A Natural History, 3 votes, H's for Hawk, 2 votes, and The Goldfinch, 1 vote. I will leave voting open on Ravelry and on Yarns at Yin Hu until June 20th, and then I will close the voting, determine the winner, and make that announcement through my blog on Ravelry and probably even on Instagram, so that if you would like to read along, you have a little bit of time to secure the book in paper copy or digital copy. And the read-along will start on June 24th and will extend until September 1st. My summer break ends with Labor Day weekend. I guess slightly before Labor Day weekend this year. So the end of August will be our time to wrap up the read-along. I hope you cast your vote. You can also leave a post explaining your vote and trying to convince others. And you could also make a post talking about other titles you plan to read over the summer. A lot of knitters are voracious readers and listeners, and I think we're all looking for new titles and recommendations. So feel free to talk not just about those 4 choices, but any reading you're excited about on the Ravelry thread.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. 2 ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Kurtz sings, burn out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Crystal Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature's herb will get you high till your face is mine. Jump on a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway night. nature thing. It's a sway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.